Good morning. It's 8th of June. Our New Testament reading today is James chapter 2. I'm going to read to you once again from Brother Neville Smart's book on the Epistle of James. This passage is a consideration of James chapter 2 and verse 14. What doth it profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not works? Can that faith save him? Brother Smart writes this. In his concluding comments on respect of persons, James was led to urge his readers to bring their words and their works into harmony with the law of liberty, by which they must eventually be judged. So speak ye, and so do, as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. This is, in effect, a reiteration of the controlling theme of the whole epistle. Be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only. And so earnestly does James feel the urgency of this principle, that he is impelled now to a forceful restatement of it in terms of the relationship between faith and works. Speak and act, he argues, in accordance with the law in which you profess faith. For if your supposed faith does not affect your works and actions, what is it but a worthless sham? It will be helpful to consider James' further argument, not only in its particular context, but also in relation to the rest of scriptural teaching upon the respective functions of faith and works in the divine scheme of salvation. Before coming, then, to a detailed examination of James' own comments, we may profitably take note of some other scriptural statements. There is none righteous, no, not one. A humble recognition of this grim truth is the necessary basis of any effective approach to God. Without it, the very concept of salvation is meaningless. It is fitting, then, that Paul should quote this among other declarations of Scripture as a preliminary to his explanation in Romans 3 of the principles underlying the divine offer. God is all righteous. Man is born in unrighteousness and is committed by the nature he bears to deeds of unrighteousness. He is, therefore, debarred from harmonious communion with his Maker, and from all that is involved in it. For what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion can there be between light and darkness? How then can man achieve unity with God? How can he attain the righteousness which is its prerequisite? Obviously not by his own efforts merely, for in the nature of the case they are foredoomed to failure. Such was Paul's answer to those who suggested that a man might attain righteousness through obedience to the law given through Moses. Through works of law shall no flesh be accounted righteous in his sight, for through law cometh the knowledge of sin. That's Romans 3, verse 20. Obedience to law could never be the basis of righteousness before God, since of itself it did nothing to remove the defiling taint of sin from human nature. And in fact, the more holy, righteous, and good the law, the more impossible it became to keep it, its ultimate effect being to convince a man of the exceeding sinfulness of the nature he bore, that every mouth might be stopped, and all the world become guilty before God. On what basis, then, can a man be accounted righteous in the sight of God? But now a righteousness of God apart from law hath been manifested, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, even the righteousness of God which is through faith in Jesus Christ unto all them that have faith. Righteousness is not of man's achieving, but is of God's giving. And for that we should be eternally grateful. Thank you for listening.